research faculty at the Palmer College, which is a chiropractic college. We have three campuses now, my home institution in Davenport, Iowa. I'm currently at the Palmer West, which is in San Jose, because I'm currently dual posted at the UCSF Institute for Health Policy Studies as a research fellow there. Okay, so what I'd like to share with you today is a survey of chiropractors from 2002-03. And just to give you a background on why this survey was conducted, I was interested in finding out, at the time there were essentially three clinical practice guidelines that had been released relative to chiropractic care. And so I was surveying the attitudes, knowledges, and behaviors of chiropractors relative to these chiropractic-specific standards of care or clinical practice guidelines. In addition to that, I was interested in finding out more about chiropractors' attitudes, knowledge, and behaviors relative to other standards of care for preventive services generally, more generally. So to get my information relative to existing standards of care for prevention, I went to the Clinician's Handbook of Preventive Services that you are probably familiar with. This was the first edition because the survey was earlier on. I did find several standards out there at the time relative to physical activity, nutrition, tobacco cessation, essentially healthy living lifestyle kinds of standards. That was pretty straightforward. In addition, in that handbook, chapter 57 was devoted to the topic of polypharmacy, which I found kind of intriguing. You know, it hadn't occurred to me until I went through the handbook whether or not this could have some relevance for chiropractic practice. So in my survey, I also included some questions relative to this potential topic of prevention. So what I will present for you today, my objectives, is to describe for you the experiences of U.S. chiropractors in identifying potential adverse drug events in their chiropractic patients, drawn from this data from my survey of chiropractors in 2002-03. And then at the end, we'll discuss the potential role of chiropractors for screening for adverse drug events in the community. So a quick overview of my survey methods. I pilot tested my questions on a sample of key informants, and these were drawn from the leadership rosters of the Congress of Chiropractic State Associations, the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards, and the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners. I don't know if you're aware of, you know, or how similar this might be to other professions, but at this point in time, chiropractors are licensed in each of the individual states. And so depending on where they choose to practice after they graduate, there's a different state board that they would have to, so hence the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards, to get representation from all of the state boards. My methods were an initial mailing of the survey, two follow-up mailings to keep dunning my potential respondents, and an initial phone follow-up to find out, well, to encourage them to return the survey, and if not, to find out more about those chiropractors that didn't respond, to see whether there was a systematic bias in non-respondents and that. My sampling frame was drawn from all chiropractors that were licensed by their state boards in 2002, so this is calendar year 2002, and from that universe of over 67,000 state board licensed chiropractors, and again, this list was corrected for redundancies. It's not atypical for chiropractors to have a state board license in more than one state, particularly if those states are adjoining, like Illinois, Missouri. And so we eliminated redundancies to get unique chiropractors. And from that drew a simple random sample from that of 2,500. And then in addition, we replicated the sampling methodology employed in the community tracking study, which is the CTS here, in order to draw another random sample of another 2,500. Across those two random samples, our response rates overall to our survey was about 50%. Not atypical for busy professionals, in spite of, you know, encouraging them to respond and that. So I've shown you kind of that we have essentially two separate random samples, but from here on out, I'll report to you essentially the gist of the findings as one set of findings because they're pretty similar. Okay, so to give you a perspective on the essentially the demographics of the profession, the key demographics I've picked up for you, largely a white male constituency, most engaged in solo practice, about 70%. This has declined somewhat, the solo practice. It used to be much more common. Over 90% of chiropractors, probably as recently as a decade ago, used to be in solo practice. And now we're seeing a lot more chiropractors in either multiple practice settings, chiropractic specific, or even increasingly more multidisciplinary practice settings where they're practicing with other healthcare providers like medical primary care or neuro specialty medical. On your right here, what I've labeled chiropractic specific credentials at 32%, and then the other specialized credentials. And just to give you a sense of what I mean when I'm talking about that, within chiropractic, you can, after graduation, go into a more specialized focus, obtain what we call a diplomate of one of the American boards of chiropractic specialty service, for instance, in radiology, orthopedics, rehabilitation, sports medicine, and that. And so in addition to asking chiropractors whether they possess these specialized credentials, 30% of them did, we also asked whether they had any other specialized credentials that were not specific to chiropractic. And we gave them examples so that they could, kind of draw from that. And the examples that we gave them were impairment rating, ergonomics, or industrial consulting, CPR or EMT, sports medicine. So you might see, for instance, a sports medicine credential specific to chiropractic, or it's not unusual for that to be more of a multidisciplinary kind of degree as well, or advanced specialty training, nutrition, weight management, things like that. And so we have 40% of our chiropractors about also possess these beyond the DC specialized credentials. The age and years in practice, as you can see, what we're looking at is primarily a middle-aged, since I'm 50, I'll stick with that. That's middle-aged practitioners. Although, what you'll see here is that approximately 70% of our chiropractors have been in practice less than 20 years, which may seem at odds with, a somewhat older, middle-aged constituency. And so to that, I can relate to you that when I was in chiropractic college, it was not atypical to see among that cohort of chiropractic students essentially second career. So these are folks that had been out and had other careers and then went into chiropractic as a second career. Although, in talking to some of my colleagues from the chiropractic section last night at dinner, what we're seeing is over time probably a shift toward an increasingly younger cohort of chiropractic students that are coming right out of college and their prerequisites and undergraduate degree right into chiropractic college. Okay, so specific to my survey question, which asked them, and I was looking at the other practice guidelines, but I also wanted to ask them about this possibility of polypharmacy in their chiropractic patients. And so I asked them if they had ever identified an adverse pharmaceutical event in one of their chiropractic patients, such as a prescription drug reaction, interaction, or toxicity. And if yes, I also invited them to, and I gave them a couple of lines to report some qualitative data, I hoped, in terms of what type of pharmaceutical event that they're talking about, what action they took relative to that. So this next slide is the quantitative data. And 60% of the chiropractors reported that, in fact, they had identified an adverse pharmaceutical event in one of their patients. How often has this occurred in the past couple of years? And you can see the numbers here. 5% are, less than once in the last 2 years. A majority, it's happening 5 to 10 times in a year. Okay, so what I'm sharing for you here in this slide is the those additional two lines where I invited them to share their narrative responses, and so this is my qualitative data, to actually describe the adverse drug event. The last section there that I've kind of grayed out, again, this is qualitative, very exploratory, preliminary, and so I'm just using this as kind of a first pass at seeing what's going on out there. I didn't find this last category of responses to be very helpful. They were generally very vague, you know, just kind of general reference to nondescript reference to meds, or, you know, they didn't specifically identify whether it was prescription versus over-the-counter and that. Relative to the more usable data, I thought, I have a couple of slides to share with you. And the chiropractors in these responses either specifically mentioned a prescription drug by name or mentioned by specific drug type or purpose. Okay, so by the drug name, those that were identified by name, and, you know, relative to this, you know, what I'm sharing with you, the Celebrex and Vioxx, keep in mind that this survey was back in 2002-03, so this may, you know, if we even redid the survey today, we may see a slightly different response. In this last category, the other, for the Rx specific mention by drug name, not unusual, given the kind of population that we're talking about, you know, chiropractic population, users probably primarily seeking out chiropractic care for pain, arthritis, you know, and it's not unusual, as you all know, to see depression as a comorbidity with pain. And so this list of specific drug mentions is probably not unusual. As well, this second category, the drugs mentioned by drug type, that last category, the other very similar kind of types of drugs for arthritis, pain, perhaps depression as a comorbidity with pain. Under this mentioned by drug type, you can see hypertension medications and blood pressure medications reported by the chiropractors. And my best recall in kind of describing for you how chiropractors describe these events as well as what they did, typically we're talking about patients, perhaps older patients, the chiropractors picking up that the patients are reporting dizziness or, you know, falling or things like that, and the response of the chiropractor is to make that known to the primary care prescribing doc to let them know that, you know, there may be a medication adjustment that needs to be looked at. Okay, so the other two classes that I've saved for last, as you can see, my first line under the specific mention by drug name are your statins, Lipitor, Zocor, and Bacol. As well, under the mention by drug type, we're seeing pretty pronounced reporting of adverse drug events relative to statins and cholesterol meds in this chiropractic patient population. So what I'll share for you in this next slide is some of the examples of narrative reports that the chiropractor shared with me relative to the statins. So I'll give you all a minute to think what you think is going to, what this next slide is going to look like, and what the chiropractors are reporting relative to their chiropractic patients and statins. Are we ready? Okay. Any surprises there? Okay. So what you're seeing, you know, I mean, you know, these are patients that are maybe going to the chiropractor initially for their back pain. And so, like, you know, the second example here is that, you know, this chiropractor has an established patient with a chronic long-term back pain condition, and that when they start the statin, he's seeing an increase in the pain reporting. And, you know, all of these other ones as well, you know, muscle pain, muscle weakness, fatigue, things of that nature. Well, I was going to wait for my discussion section to talk about that, because this, again, you know, it came up last night in talking to, you know, my chiropractic colleagues who are, you know, the chiropractic healthcare section here. Where do we go with this information? And what we can, you know, share a report based on having been in chiropractic college 20 years ago. I can't believe I just said that out loud, but like 20 years ago, we were, to best recall, getting one survey course in pharmacology, which was essentially, these are the kind of drugs that your patients might be on. These are the kinds of side effects you might see. But, you know, we're talking one semester and a survey course. Chiropractors don't prescribe medication. They don't perform surgery. It's not that they're anti-drug or anti-surgery. It's just that that's not in their chosen scope of practice and what have you. Well, now see, this becomes an issue. And keep in mind that chiropractors are a little bit squeamish about stepping outside of scope of practice. And so, you know, that, again, this is part of my reason for presenting it here, is to kind of brainstorm ideas about how to move these findings into action steps, if you will. Okay. So, again, revisiting my objectives, I described for you the experiences of U.S. chiropractors in identifying adverse drug events in their chiropractic patients, and what I'll do from this point then is invite a discussion about the potential role of chiropractors in screening for potential adverse drug events in the community. Now, as I was kind of, you know, moving forward, you know, trying to get my mind around the second objective, I went back to the Clinician's Handbook for Preventive Services, which is now in its second edition. And there's now, and you probably know this and probably know why, I don't, why there is now no chapter on polypharmacy. And so that wasn't any use to me to try to kind of think about how to move forward with next steps. But what I did find, and again, you know, this is probably no surprise to you, is the FDA MedWatch Adverse Drug Reporting System. And so I you know, kind of went through their website and pulled through representative verbiage here that I share with you to kind of identify criteria to identify whether or not these are, if this is going to help in terms of giving recommendations back to the profession. And, in fact, it seems like, you know, just based on this first pass, a very exploratory study, is that we are seeing that there we're identifying reportable events in chiropractic patients. And, you know, it's not necessary, according to the website, to be a certain of a cause and effect. Everything needs to be reported and then let MedWatch sort it out on the other end. Their definition of a serious adverse event, and I've highlighted here kind of, you know, some of the text that, you know, anything that might result in disability that requires an intervention, and other important medical events. So in conclusion, I think I've presented enough and kind of have a first pass at understanding that chiropractors are, in fact, identifying reportable adverse drug events in their patient population. This carries implications for chiropractic education and practice. You know, to recommend that they report everything, you know, using the MedWatch system is one thing, but it also, you know, raises the issues like you were talking about. How do we now, this next step, hopefully approach the profession both in terms of practicing chiropractors through continuing education types of outreach, as well as the future chiropractors that are in our chiropractic colleges, to enhance their skill set in being able to identify, kind of think through the red flags, the levels of suspicion, as well as, you know, at my next bullet here, the implications for coordination of care, to help chiropractors figure out how best to put that into actionable steps, whether it's referral, understanding, you know, whether we're talking an emergent situation versus an urgent situation. What is the role of pharmacists in the primary care team? You know, should the chiropractors wait until the patient can get an appointment back with their prescribing MD? Should they be, you know, notifying the pharmacist as well? Should this be going through the patient, or should the chiropractor be stepping forward and communicating with other professionals? Because what we know is that relying on the patient to handle that coordination of care, it's not a good idea. You know, we're talking about fragmentation of care and compromising the quality of care. So, thank you for your attention.